station you're listening to. They happen to be my views, the views of our guests, the views of our callers. And of course, we welcome your calls from out across America at 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY. Or here in the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. That's 464-8295. And today, if you want to call in, why, you may, because we don't have any guests today. We just got a call a couple of minutes ago that our regularly scheduled guest is going to have to cancel both this evening's program and a program later this week. So we're going to have some open time, and we'd love to hear from you. Give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-5-HIV-WARM. And until you call, I'm going to have to talk a little bit about the war on terrorism. And, I mean, everybody knows that this is what it's all about. We're involved in a war on terrorism, and we have been for a long time. But, you know, the question is, if we're really involved in a war on terrorism, why is it that the President of the United States now wants to turn control over six of our major ports to a company that is owned by the Emirate of Dubai, which recognized the Taliban and has a very, very questionable record as far as Islamic terrorism? In fact, if you read the 911 report, there are many references to the fact that the Emirate of Dubai and the other Emirates were helping Osama bin Laden. So why would we want to turn control of our ports over to a company that there might be some serious question as to their loyalty to America? They're Muslims. Do you think in a war between the Muslim world and the Christian world, whose side would they be on? And I would fear that they would be on the Muslim side. And, of course, President Bush has said, well, I didn't know anything about this. This was all arranged by the committee. And the committee said it was perfectly all right, and I'm in no way responsible. But if Congress enacts legislation that says we can't do it, I will veto the bill. Now, that's quite a statement, since George Bush has steadfastly refused to veto anything. He even wouldn't veto the McCain-Feingold bill, which was terrible, unconstitutional legislation. But he said he signed it because he was sure that the Supreme Court would find it unconstitutional. And they didn't. And they just stripped us of our freedoms. Oh, shucks, just another mistake. Oh, I'm so incompetent. I was sure the Supreme Court would find it unconstitutional because I thought it was unconstitutional. That's why I signed it. Ladies and gentlemen, how dumb do they really think we are? And do they have that total disdain for the American people that we can't see through these this thinly disguised excuses that are given for the betrayal of America? If we are really at war with Islamic terrorism, you would think that they would certainly want to be checking every crate and container that came in to the United States, but, you know, they don't do that. They only check 5% of them. That means if you're a terrorist and you want to sneak a nuclear weapon into the United States, you got a 95% chance of success. And the question is, if we're really involved in a war on terrorism, why is it that we're only checking 5% of the cartons that come into this country? Maybe we ought to just secure our borders and start producing things ourselves and stop all this foolish globalization and protect our country. We have 15,000 chemical plants in this country. Why don't they mobilize the National Guard and have those chemical plants, you know, guarded? Because I will tell you, if one of those was attacked, why, it could kill thousands or tens of thousands or hundreds of thousands of Americans. And are we really involved in a war on terrorism? Or are we involved in a war on the people of the United States? Well, this is Dr. Stan here from Radio Liberty, and right now we have Marcellus is calling in from Davenport. And I should mention for our listeners, with our regularly scheduled guest had to beg off at the last minute, so it's going to be open lines today. And we basically started out on the war on terrorism and simply asking, if we're really involved in a war on terrorism, why does the government want to turn over the control of six of our major ports to a company owned by the Emirate of Dubai, who that certainly has a very questionable record as far as their support for freedom, and certainly the 9/11 Commission report has a number of references to the fact that the Dubai was working with the other side. So why is the Bush administration so intent upon turning our ports over to them? If we're really involved in a war on terrorism, why have we never closed the southern border? Terrorists are coming across there on a regular basis, and if you've read the book which we carry, The Al-Qaeda Connection, written by Paul Williams, who's very, very well informed, he will tell you that there's so much evidence that there are terrorist cells here in the United States, and the government knows that the terrorist cells here and is doing nothing to stop them from operating here. And let's go then, of course, to Marcellus, who's calling us from Davenport. Hi, Marcellus. How are you doing?
Hello, Dr. Monteith.
And now, whereabouts, which Davenport? Is that Iowa?
No, this is Davenport, Iowa, and, of course, it's Davenport-Bettendorf, and then across the Mississippi River, there's Rock Island and Moline. This is what's commonly referred to as the Quad City area, probably maybe almost 300,000 people, I suppose.
All right, you listen to a shortwave or internet?
I listen to your shortwave. I discovered you about a year ago, and I've supported you and listened every single four times a day.
God bless. Well, thank you very much. Then you're getting some repetition. But anyway, tell us, do you have a question or comment?
Well, the one comment I had is that we've just recently opened a brand new branch library here on Fairmont Avenue in Davenport, Iowa. And it's a very sumptuous place, thick carpet, very big, lots and lots of computers, and even a fireplace. But over in the center of this library, where all the new books are displayed, on top of the shelf, in a little gold stand all of its own, with no other books around it, is this new book. It's a brand new printing. It's got blue. It's a very beautiful looking thing. And it is The Rites and Rituals of the Abracadabra, by Aleister Crowley.
Really, Aleister?
Oh, yeah.
Good old Aleister, right?
Good old Aleister's always with us.
Well, of course, yeah, have you seen this? They Sold Their Souls for Rock and Roll video, because that goes so much into Aleister, and so many of our musicians are Crowleyites, as was, of course, Timothy Leary, Alfred Kinsey, Harry Hay, who organized the gay liberation movement. He has a tremendous influence today, and hold on, we'll be right back. Well, this is Arthur Stan here at Radio Liberty, and I of course, our regularly scheduled guest didn't show up today, so we will be taking your calls here at Radio Liberty at 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or here in the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. That's 464-8295. And we had Marcellus calling us from Davenport, Iowa, commenting that they have a great new, beautiful, luxurious library in their town. But there, you know, certainly with all new books and a special place all by itself is one book, beautifully done. It's called, what is it, Abracadabra by Aleister Crowley?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And now, have you looked very much into Aleister Crowley? Do you know much about him?
I have been studying Aleister Crowley for probably 30 years before most people ever even knew who he was.
Well, then you probably know more about him than I do.
Well, the thing is, he's always had such a following, and of course, it really got big in the 60s, you know, with the Beatles album cover and everything.
Right.
But people don't realize just how much he is revered among a lot of people that really don't know what they're getting into. You know, one time there is a Bantam paperback. It's very big. I don't think it's maybe 400 or 500 pages. It's horribly hard to get. I've got an edition. And some of his Crowley tarot cards. A number of years ago, I was up in Madison, Wisconsin at a occult store there. And I laid both of these items on this counter. And this guy took one look at it, and he laid out $75 cash. I mean, his stuff is extremely valuable. This man is indeed an occult god of the modern age.
And I think you're absolutely right. Yeah. Now, is the book that they have on display, is that can be taken out, or is that just on
display? Sure. This can be taken out, and of course, you know, the young people are going to get it, and some of the older ones, and people don't know really who they are, and you try to explain to these people, and these women that are librarians or even teachers in the public school system, they are some of the most uneducated, uncultured dolts I think I've ever dealt with in my life.
But
they have no idea who these people are. They don't care. But the thing is this. They do a lot of sorting, and they put up what they're told to put up. These people that have these public, government-sponsored libraries, they know exactly what they're doing. They know exactly what to put up on that shelf so everybody can see it.
Well, of course, for our listeners, why Aleister Crowley was, first of all, he was a 33rd degree Mason, I think for 8 or 10 years before he was invited to go into the upper echelons of Masonry, those levels which most Masons don't even know exist.
Yeah, you know, I was a Mason. I was a 32nd degree, and my father before him were Masons. And people don't hear about this stuff, your average working class. They don't know who Aleister Crowley was. And, of course, the dogmas of the Scottish Rite written by Pike, which you see in all Masonic libraries, it weighs about 3 pounds. And there was nobody that I knew of that ever sat down and read that thing all the way through word for word. But I did. I read every word of it. And slowly but surely I saw what I was in, and I got out.
Well, I think it takes a lot of courage, because even to come on the radio and mention it, because I know Masons who actually are Christians, who are afraid to come on the radio and speak out publicly, you know, and reveal that they were Masons and they recognized what they were into. Because, the trouble is that I think Mandy P. Hall put it best when he said that Masonry is a fraternity within a fraternity and out of fraternity made up of people who really want to do good, and they have their shrine circus, and they have their shrine football game, and they have their hospitals, and they're really well-motivated people, but there is an inner core that studies the Ancorum and the Anconorum, and I had to look up those books, but I'm sure you well know that is the secret and the secret of secrets. And, of course, this is the continuation of the ancient mystery religions that have carried the secrets down right to this age.
Yeah. You know, when I went through the shrine and the consistory and all that sort of thing, we had all the big centers at Rockford, Illinois, and I guess it still is at that time. And this carries on for about a weekend, so you only get to see about maybe 3 or 4 degrees, and you'd have to be in there for, you know, many, many years to go through all of them, all the 32nd degrees. And the more I watched them, and with my Bible training and study, and I've done some writing and authored a few books over the years, and I said to myself, I shouldn't be here. I know what these guys are all about. It's not the guys who were sitting next to me down in the theater. It was the people up there behind the scenes. That's who controls it.
And I'm sure that it is, and I'm sure that, you know, they're probably, by the time you get to be 33rd degree, most people have a pretty good idea of what it is, but I'm sure even some 33rd degree Masons really don't know. It's only when you get into the upper echelons above the 33rd degree that you get into the Frank Luciferian worship. And that's what's so difficult for people to understand. Why would anybody want to worship Lucifer? Did you ever figure it out when, you know, with all of your reading and studying, why would anybody want to worship him?
Well, they don't really know that that's what they're worshiping. They're talking about such things as light and the enlightened one and, of course, the square with the letter G, and they've really got it through their head that all these things represent God, the God of the Christians or the Hebrews, but of course it doesn't represent any of those things.
And of course the G really is for Gnosticism.
Yeah, and of course sometimes when you're in the lower degrees now, they'll tell you G is for geometry, and then they go on up, they'd really don't even mention God, but that's the implication of it in some literature, of course, something like that. But you never hear that name really mentioned outward in the ceremony.
And, of course, what they do is they just simply deceive people. And when you read Albert Pike, and I'm sure you've read my book, Brotherhood of Darkness, haven't you?
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, I simply quote from Morals and Dogma, where Albert Pike says, we intentionally deceive the people in the lower echelons of Masonry because they're not smart enough, they're not worthy enough to really know the secret which was reserved for the adepts and the princes of Masonry. So this is really what it's all about. It's all built on deceit and deception, and yet there's so many good people who get drawn into this without ever realizing, of course, that once they've sworn those bloody oaths, unless they renounce them, why, of course, they will be doomed to stand before the great white throne of judgment on Judgment Day. And, of course, most Masons think that's great. I'm going to stand before the great white throne of judgment because they haven't read the scriptures. But what is the great... Do you know what the great white throne of judgment is? It's the judgment of the damned. It's not where the Christians go.
Yeah, that's right.
Well, our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. And Marcellus is simply talking about the fact that there in the city where he lives, on prominent display in the local library is a copy of a book by Aleister Crowley. who was true one of the leaders of the World Satanic Movement. He had a shrine in Sicily, and of course he was forced to leave Sicily because there were so much many rumors that he was involved with human sacrifices, and I rather think that he was. He wrote in the greatest power comes from sacrificing a child. I mean, these were really wicked and evil people. He had belonged to the Golden Dawn, the Order of the Golden Dawn, and then he formed his own OTO, and of course that's operating openly in America today, isn't it?
Yeah, and well, not only that, but you get over to Sicily, you know, and there's people like Kinsey. You know, this place in Sicily was almost like a shrine, and Kinsey visited that many, many times over in Sicily, where Aleister Crowley had his little orgies and all the other little things he did over there. But the thing is how so many intellectuals got tied in and got drug into this whole silly philosophy, which is satanic to the core. And then they make a movie about Kinsey making some kind of a hero out of it.
I don't think it did very well, at least. I hope it didn't. In fact, what was the Beatle album?
Sergeant Pepper's Band.
Sergeant Pepper. And, of course, if you look very carefully, you'll see the picture of Aleister Crowley there hidden in the crowd. And, of course, they hide these things in plain sight, and so some of the other prominent rock bands did exactly the same thing. They were all Crowleyites. And for our listeners out there, if you have not yet seen the videos, they sold their souls for rock and roll. The 3-hour, the 4-hour, the 10-hour version, you really need to see that because it takes you into the relationship between Aleister Crowley and the music that's captivated the minds of our youth and being played in our churches today. Well, Marcellus, do you think that some of the people in your area are waking up?
Well, I would like to say that, but we don't have that many people that will listen. You know, if you can get somebody who's halfway intelligent and get them in an environment where they'll sit down and listen, some of them will. But you know, the thing is that most people really just don't care, because we've been so dumbed down now for the last 4 years that people don't have the background and the foundation to really understand something like that when you try to explain it to them. They have no knowledge of history. They have no knowledge of culture. They know nothing. They have no training in the classical languages like we used to have. But sometimes you can get through to one. But mostly these are people who are already, you know, church members or fundamentalists of some type or another. But we just have to keep at it and keep trying. You know, I'm going to be 64 years old next month, and the way time has accelerated and the way this horrible evil and nonsense has come upon us has been almost, you know, sudden. I was taking it for granted that a lot of people knew this stuff, and then you wake up one morning and find out they know practically nothing.
Well, our job, of course, is to get the information out, and then, of course, to try to constantly bring the new information to listeners, and then it's their job to reach others. And I know from all across the country, you'd be amazed how often I'll get a call, and some woman will say, well, my mother or my father or my uncle wanted me to listen to your program, and that's how I got started listening. So it's really people telling people, telling people, and we can tell from our response that more and more people are out there listening and getting informed. And then when we get something great like this new DVD I've been talking about, The Secret Mysteries of America's Beginning, which really does help to get the information out. And of course, fortunately, I was flattered that they asked me to do a little bit. I have a couple of places where I'm actually talking on there, but here I get a chance to get the message out, this idea that there are the two forces in America, the Christian and, of course, the occult. And what most people don't understand is this battle has been going on for thousands of years. But I think it's being played out, and I think it's coming to a conclusion, a climax today. What do you think, Marcellus?
Oh, yes, there's no doubt about it. You know, when I do my daily reading, I was looking in the book of Numbers today, and the 32nd chapter, it says, "Be sure your sins will find you out." And that's really America's Bible verse right now.
Amen.
We come to that final point. You know, I heard a young man, you know, sometimes you listen to some of these younger preachers, and all of a sudden they'll say something so simple, yet so profound.
Hold that thought, and we'll let you tell us when we get back. And again, our number 1-888-24 Liberty here at Radio Liberty. Well, Marcellus, what was the had been said that was so profound?
And what he was saying is simply this: sin has its limits, and we went just about as far as we could go. Sodom and Gomorrah had its limits, and that sort of thing was actually legalized there in those days, in those Bible days in ancient times, and that's what happened. They were destroyed, and Rome was destroyed, and Greek, and all the rest.
And, of course, the way they're popularizing homosexuality and everything is, it's just the most normal thing in the world. There are these bigots out there who disapprove of homosexuality. I mean, but they're really such repulsive individuals, and the homosexuals are such nice people. And I have known through the years many nice homosexuals. And many of them are very kind and very considerate and very intelligent and very well educated and very well to do. But of course, to say that this is perfectly normal and we want, you know, to be in our schools and telling our kids that this is perfectly normal, what we ought to be doing is telling the homosexuals, don't you realize you're going to die at a very young age? Because the average homosexual dies somewhere between, male homosexual dies between, you know, 39 and 41. Do you really, if you really care about homosexuals, you've got to tell them that they're killing themselves. But nobody wants to do that, and especially the Centers for Disease Control Center for Disease Circulation. I can't really decide which one it is. But, you know, our leaders, oh, no, we never want to say it. We don't want to be judgmental. We've just got to learn to be tolerant. This is really sort of makes me very, very bilious. How about you?
Well, I feel exactly the same way about it. But some of the main reasons they've made some of the great inroads is that, you know, the homosexual community has produced probably some of the greatest writers in English literature. People like Truman Capote, and now they've made a movie, and they're gonna publicize that. Might even get an Academy Award. And you have people like Gore Vidal. Some of the stuff he's written is almost legendary. But I mean, of course, you could go on. And they are good writers, and I'm a writer myself, and I appreciate good writing. But the thing is this: I'm starting to think that your theory that you expounded on not too long ago, there may be something to it. These people get a certain amount of talent, they get a certain amount of expertise, and it's given to them. And it's not given to them by the Almighty.
Amen.
It's given to them by the other force.
And really, there are many, many writers, you know, who begin to wonder where their ideas come from. There was a wonderful writer many years ago. Her name was Taylor Caldwell. And when I was first getting started in this whole conservative movement back in the early 60s and early 70s, why, Taylor Caldwell was writing some wonderful, wonderful books. And some of them were wonderful Christian stories, but she wasn't a Christian. And the amazing thing was she never knew where her ideas came from. And eventually there was a book, and I forgot, I think it was In Search of a Soul or something like that, written by one of the editors of Newsweek, who went with Taylor Caldwell as they went to seances, and she was going to seances to try to find out where her ideas came from. And I really believe, of course, that many of our writers of today and many of our poets, great poets, have had these thoughts channeled to them from other sources. And when you understand that these ideas can be channeled, they can be channeled from the dark side or from our side, from the good side, why, of course, then you begin to understand the true nature of this spiritual battle we're involved in.
I think one of the really big disappointments was Ayn Rand. You know, her books were so inspiring. They were read by millions. And yet, all this power, this competence, this self-will, instead of, you know, directing it and giving thanks to the Almighty.
Hold that thought. Just hold that thought. Well, this is Arthur Stanton back here at Radio Liberty, and we don't have a regularly scheduled guest this afternoon, so give us a call at 1-888-24-LIBERTY, that's 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or 464-8295, and we've got Marcellus, who's calling us from Davenport, Iowa, and of course he's been a 32nd degree Mason who discovered what he was into. He's a writer, he certainly is very well educated, and just talking about it. About Ayn Rand, and so much of Ayn Rand's, of course, Atlas Shrugged and other things she wrote are classics. But Ayn Rand was coming from a completely materialistic point of view, not giving any thought to God, to the fact that, you know, really our success in life is not our own success, but the success we have because God is deemed to give it to us, and totally feeling that each individual... I believe in individualism, but individualism to the point where she had it, there was no place in her philosophy for God.
Yeah, that's right. Because it was pretty much of an atheistic thing on her part, but it was such magnificent writing. If she was just given credit where credit was due, think of all the good that she could have really done.
Well, of course, she was really the father of the modern-day libertarian movement. I'll never forget. Alan, pardon me, Howard Phillips, talking about the libertarian philosophy. And he said, you know, this is really the world's second oldest religion. You know, it was whispered, beneath the branches of the tree of good and evil in the first days of creation. And that is that you can be as gods. You can do it yourself. Do what thou wilt. That was the whole idea of libertarian philosophy. You know, go ahead and do whatever you want to. You can succeed on your own. And I believe we should try to succeed on our own, but we also have to be reliant to God. And we have to realize that many times our success is not of our own making, but it's really what He wants us to do. And if we follow His, leading, right, we can certainly do a lot better than we try to do this on our own. I've seen so many people try to do it on their own, and they do pretty well for a time. And then suddenly their whole world implodes on them. And then where do they turn? So our job, of course, is to make people understand that there is a spiritual battle going on, and you certainly better be sure which side you're on in the time such as this, because I realize and I really believe that we are entering into the most difficult times in our nation's history.
I also think one of the more important things, Dr. Stan, it seems very, very simple, but if people will open up their scriptures and read it each day under a systemized plan so that they can go all the way through it every year. And I'll guarantee that if they'll do that every day of their life, they'll see something new, something they missed before. They'll come under more understanding. And then maybe as time goes on, they might want to delve into what we used to call, before the great dumbing down, the three great languages of classical antiquity, Hebrew, Greek, and Latin, that they might want to explore that avenue. And that'll make it even more crisp and clear, and there'll be more impact to it. That's the key to our reading and our studying. You know, there's other things beside that, but that should be the first thing in the morning.
And, of course, that really is the source of all knowledge. And, if you read the Bible, you'll realize that there's nothing new under the sun. What we're seeing with the moral breakdown and the homosexuality and the sexual immorality in our country today and children turning against their parents and corruption in the politicians and excessive taxation, this has happened time and time and time and time again down throughout history. And God has always intervened sooner or later and, of course, brought terrible suffering on nations. And, of course, that wonderful quotation from Thomas Jefferson that I love to use so often, you know, the God who gave us life, gave us liberty, but can the liberty of a nation be secure when the conviction has been forgotten that liberty is the gift of God? I tremble for my country when I reflect that God is just. And His justice cannot sleep forever. And I think everybody out there in the listening audience should remember that and try to get that ingrained into them. Because Thomas Jefferson, certainly some of his religious beliefs I would disagree with, although I suspect towards the end of his life he gave up many of his alliances with the spirit world and did return to the religion, of his youth. But certainly, he was a great philosopher, and I believe he was absolutely right. He recognized the spiritual forces that were at work, and he thought that they would destroy America. He just, of course, did not have the faith to accept the very simple thing that Lord Jesus Christ was God Himself. He could not accept that. He could accept the philosophy of Christ, but not the divinity. And that, of course, is the final step of faith. Well, Marcellus, is there anything you'd like to say before we let you go?
No, I better get going now, but I like what you said about, there's nothing new under the sun. These things have always been around. I just got a tape set today of The Prince by Machiavelli with that wonderful narration by Fritz Weaver. And, the same thing was going on back then in Italy, hundreds and hundreds of years ago, and it will keep on going on.
And, of course, there's a man, a neocon in Washington, D.C. today. His name is Michael Ledeen. He's a great admirer of Machiavelli. He's one of the leading architects of the Bush foreign policy, Mideast policy, and certainly one of the really most influential men in the world today. And he thinks Machiavelli was great.
Yeah. Well, I want to thank you for your kindness, Dr. Stan, for letting me rant on here, but I've got to go, and I think I'll call you maybe every once in a while.
Look forward to it. Thanks so much for calling.
Thank you, Doctor.
Bye-bye. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, and this is the time when, of course, we've got to remind our listeners that we do not have a regularly scheduled guest today because our regularly scheduled guest didn't show up. I had to beg off at the last minute because of personal problems. So our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. That's 464-8295. If you would like to talk to us, if you have a question, a comment, you agree or disagree. But we started out talking about the war on terrorism and pointing out if we're really involved in a war on terrorism, why does the government, Bush administration want to give control of six of our major ports to a company owned by the government of Dubai? That it really has a very, very questionable record, according to the 9/11 committee report, in the relationship to the war on terrorism. And is it possible that that we really are not involved in a war on terrorism, that most of what we think we know really isn't true? If we're really involved in a war on terrorism, we have 15,000 chemical plants in the United States. Any one of those, if the terrorists were to attack them, why, you know, it would kill hundreds of thousands or tens of thousands or maybe even hundreds of thousands of Americans because of their proximity to major cities. We have 100 nuclear plants, and we should have these guarded by our National Guard instead of having our National Guard over in Iraq. You know, of course, they're being killed and maimed, many of them killed and maimed forever when we had the crisis in New Orleans. Why it took a while to get the National Guard there because so many of the troops were off fighting foreign wars, fighting for democracy overseas while we're losing our freedom here at home. So certainly you would think that it would be logical that we would be guarding all those plants, you know, because any one of the wicked terrorists could come and plant bombs or get in there or blow up the ammonia plants or the chlorine or any of these things and just get tremendous pollution. But the Bush administration isn't worried about that, almost as if they know something that the rest of us don't know. And then if we're really involved in a war on terrorism, why is it that we haven't had any attacks on the United States? Going back to 9/11, no serious attacks. If we're really involved in a war on terrorism and there's a possibility of an airline hijacking, why does the Bush administration oppose arming the airline pilots? And certainly the pilots want to be armed. Passengers, most of them would prefer that the pilots were armed because protect them. Certainly Congress has enacted legislation on two occasions so the pilots can be armed, and the Bush administration opposed it thoroughly. Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, and our guest, of course, begged off at the last minute, so we have open hours, open lines. If you'd like to call us at 1-888-24-LIBERTY, that's 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or 464-8295, we'd love to hear from you. But we were simply pointing out that there are a lot of inconsistencies in this story of the war on terrorism. After all, we went into the war on terrorism to catch the wicked Osama bin Laden and his followers who were over there in Afghanistan. The trouble was the Afghans were willing to give us Osama bin Laden if we simply give them the evidence that he was involved in 9/11. And we said, we won't give you the evidence. And so they said, well, all right, we'll send him out of the country where he can be tried. And we didn't like that. And we said, well, fine, we'll just send him out of the country. And he'll send him out of the country where you can pick him up. And we didn't want that. We immediately demanded that all the leaders of Al-Qaeda be turned over to the United States. But we didn't tell them who the leaders were we wanted. And then, of course, we immediately attacked. And then, of course, when Osama bin Laden and his followers were trapped in the mountainous areas adjacent to the Tora Bora Valley there in December of 2001, when we could have captured the wicked Osama bin Laden, the CIA hired a group of Afghan mercenaries, many of whom were loyal to Osama bin Laden, and helped him escape. Now, why didn't the CIA send special forces teams over there to capture the wicked Osama bin Laden and end this whole war on terrorism and wipe out Al-Qaeda? And then, of course, my friend Paul Sperry, I shouldn't say friend, but we've certainly talked to Paul a number of occasions and interviewed him. And in his book, The Crude Politics, I think is the title of it, why he talks about, you know, how he interviewed some of the people from, members of the special forces team that were actually fighting in Afghanistan in December of 2001, and they were allowed to go after Osama bin Laden. They weren't allowed to try to catch him or kill him. And they were allowed to pursue him into Pakistan. So if we're really interested in stopping the war on terrorism and catching the wicked Osama bin Laden, why wouldn't they allow the special forces to try to either catch him or kill him in Afghanistan or follow him into Pakistan? And they're not trying to kill him today. In fact, Congressman Kurt Weldon and Ken Timmerman tells this story in our interviews. Congressman Kurt Weldon found out where Osama bin Laden was staying, and I think it was in 2004, and he was going to be in a position he would be able to take an assassin with him, and he had it all set up. The assassin was going to stay behind and was going to kill Osama bin Laden. And when George Tenet, the head of the CIA, learned of this, he said, "You can't do this. You're not to do this." He ordered Kurt Weldon not to try to kill Osama bin Laden. Why would that be? Paul Williams, who's written the book, The Al-Qaeda Connection, which we think is an excellent book, and we recommend to you, and we do carry that, The Al-Qaeda Connection, by Paul Williams. He says that everybody knows whether Osama bin Laden is living in the Deer Valley in Pakistan, or is there part of the time they could pick him off at any time. They have no intention of doing that. And certainly we know that it was in June of last year when a fellow named Tim Berger, who's an investigative reporter for Time magazine, interviewed the director of the CIA at that time. That's the new one who replaced George Tenet. This is Peter Goss. And he asked, do you know where Osama bin Laden is? And Peter Goss gave this song and dance, and we covered that in one of our recent newsletters. And then asked the question again, "Do you know where Osama bin Laden is?" And the reply was, "I have a pretty good idea exactly where he is. Next question." In other words, they didn't want any more questions on that. "I know exactly where he is, a pretty good idea exactly where he is. Next question." If they know where he was last year, why didn't they try to get him? You mean to tell me they couldn't send a covert team in? We've got covert teams operating in Iran today. We have covert team operating in dozens of nations all over this world. Secret CIA teams and special forces teams and other military teams. So why couldn't we send them in to get Osama bin Laden? And I'd like to suggest to you, ladies and gentlemen, we have never had any intention of getting Osama bin Laden. He is a very useful enemy. Well, let's go to Bart, who's calling from Carmel. Hi, Bart. How are you doing?
Fine, sir. Thank you very much. I have a question for you, Dr. Stan, but it's not on the topic that you were just discussing.
That's all right. It's open line, so.
Okay. It's a question I've always wanted to ask you. For many years, I was kind of lost and wandering in the world, and I got involved in the New Age movement quite heavily. That's why I really appreciate Tal Brooks when he's speaking. He is so good. What a wonderful, wonderful speaker he is. And it just rings the bell for me each time he's speaking. But my question is this. It was a pretty sophisticated group that I was involved with. A lot of professionals, lawyers, that type. And they, the New Age movement will take out of the Bible the things that they can take and twist and use in their own way. And it's quite amazing how much they took out of the Bible and how they used it and made it work to fit their own agenda. And reincarnation was a big topic and a big belief in this group. They're very strong on reincarnation. And the way they made that fit into the Bible was by saying, well, they're a pretty sophisticated group. The Council of Nicaea, which occurred, what was it, 315, Dr. Stan?
Somewhere in there, right.
During the Council of Nicaea, their main point was that God's Word had always included the concept of reincarnation, but it was written out by those dastardly people during the Council of Nicaea, and that's why we don't find it. And I've always had a problem trying to address other New Agers around that subject. And what can you give me on that?
Well, where is their documentation that it was in the original scriptures? Basically, the idea of reincarnation comes from the Garden of Eden, where, of course, the serpent says to Eve, if you eat of the fruit of the tree of the knowledge of good and evil, you can be as gods, and ye shall never die. That's where the whole idea of reincarnation comes from. That's the devil's lie, man. And of course, this was never in the in the scripture, and they can't quote any scriptures where it is in there. All they can do is make a statement like, "Well, they took it out at Nicaea because they didn't want the Christians to know the truth," and that really isn't true. What Nicaea did was really to borrow it, to accept what the books were that had already been in common use. And of course, almost the whole text of the scriptures was available and had been used, for many years. They took out some of the things, some of the apocryphal books that today are in the Catholic Bible, but they are inconsistent with everything else, and they make all sorts of claims that have no justification at all, and they weren't written by people who had any first-hand knowledge of the times of Jesus Christ or were in contact with people. They were just sort of nice little stories. So, what they do is the New Agers simply lie. But then there's so much of what's going on today is a lie. But this... Go ahead.
The Gnostic Gospels and the papyrus scripts that were found in the clay jars play heavily into their whole scenario. They work that in. They take out of that too, the Gnostic Gospels and what were some of the others that were found in 1947 by the Dead Sea.
With the Dead Sea Scrolls, of course.
And the Essenes and all that. So they sort of take from the Essenes and the Gnostic Gospels and sort of combine it into this stew of beliefs that works for them. And it's the problem is that a lot of people involved with this movement, they're very smart, they're very well educated, and they've got this script down very patently, and it's just hard for me to address them on it.
Well, of course, the thing is that the foundation of their belief is faulty. I mean, they're going to use the Book of Thomas. They're going to use the Gnostic Gospels. They're going to use the Book of Enoch and a lot of the other things that have nothing to do with the Scriptures. And if you stick with the Holy Scriptures, you're going to be on the right track. These people are being totally deceived. But, of course, the greatest deception at all is that we have another chance. And, of course, in the Scriptures, we're told, it is given but, one wants to die, and then comes the judgment. So there is nothing in the Bible that suggests reincarnation. They may want to twist things here and there, but basically the Scriptures are very clear. You die, you're going to die. And we're all going to die someday, and then you're going to stand before the... And you're not going to stand before the great white throne of judgment. That's where they're going. We're going to stand before the altar of Jesus Christ. So I think that you have to be thoroughly schooled in the Scriptures. And I'm not as well schooled as I wish I were, but, you have to read the Scriptures. I think that our previous caller stressed this, how important it is to read the Scriptures on a regular basis. This prepares you for all the challenges of life, and believe me, I think we're all going to need all the help we can get in the time that lies ahead. But these people in the New Age and in the occult, and they all tie in together, what we call them, the New Age, or the Rosicrucians, or the Theosophists, or the Gnostic organizations that are out there, and certainly Masonry is an outgrowth of Gnosticism, and so basically they're all simply deceived.
Looking back on the things that I hardly believed when I was involved with this group is very frightening to me. It makes my hair stand up. I can't believe that I bought into that, but I did. And somehow, I woke up. But it, just in closing, so I can make room for another caller, Dr. Stan, I would like to say to all the people listening out there who have not yet gotten their copy, Tex Mar's book, Codex Magica, it's a must-have. It's a coffee table book that you can give to people who have never even heard any of this information, and they will be fascinated by it. It's a must-have. It's just wonderful. It's unbelievable, and it took great courage on the part of Tex to write that and put it together, and I can't recommend it highly enough.
All right, fine. Anything else you'd like to say there?
Thank you, Dr. Stan.
All right. Thanks so very much, Bart. And our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. And there really is a spiritual battle going on. There really are organized forces for the dark side. And I really fear, unfortunately, that the Christian side has been thoroughly infiltrated. They targeted our seminaries, both Catholic and Protestant a long time ago, and they've infiltrated them, and they've infiltrated them very thoroughly, and they've infiltrated their people in the upper echelons of the Catholic Church and the Protestant Church and the Jewish religion, the three great religions that all, of course, worship the same God. Now, certainly the Muslims, contrary to everything that George Bush says, the Muslims worship a different God, as does the Hindu and these others, and to think that somehow we can go ahead and pray with the Muslims, or we can pray with the Buddhists, or we can pray with the Hindu, this, of course, is a total distortion of reality. Admittedly, there is within all religions a common belief, and that is that there is a great world leader coming. And certainly we know that the Hindu waits for the return of Maitreya. The Muslim waits for the return of the Mahdi. The Jew waits for the Messiah. And the Christian waits for the return of Jesus Christ. The trouble is that all of the others are simply false and will be working with and symbolized by the Antichrist. So we're in real trouble. Well, let's go to Dax, who's calling from Central Texas. But one of the things that we'll be talking about a little bit in my next newsletter is the fact that there is a group in Iran today who believes that the only way that they're going to be able to bring about the return of the Mahdi, and they're going to bring it about, is to create chaos on earth that'll bring back the 12th Imam. And when the 12th Imam returns, he will foreshadow, just as John the Baptist foreshadowed the return of Jesus Christ. So the 12th Imam will, of course, foreshadow the return of the Mahdi, will, of course, lead the world into this utopia and share a law. Well, of course, what we're really talking about, you know, is Satan's plan, not God's plan. Let's go to Dax, calling from Central Texas. Hi, Dax. How are you doing?
Hi, Dr. Stan. I'm so glad every day to be able to hear you, and I try my best to get people to listen, but so many people don't want to know the truth. It's frightening. But I keep trying. I've been in this battle since the 60s.
Oh, so have I. So, but don't be discouraged, you know. You just keep trying to tell them, because as things get worse, they're going to remember what you said.
Oh, I make headway, chipping away little by little. And there, you know, there's some things they can't deny, and it opens their eyes.
Oh, I mean, for instance, you're down there close, not too far from the border. Why doesn't the Bush administration close the border? I mean, why don't they enforce the federal laws and begin prosecuting these people, you know, the big corporations that are hiring illegal aliens? Why don't they do that? And the answer is, of course, because they don't want to stop immigration. They want to destroy our sovereignty. When you understand that, it all makes sense.
That's right. Dr. Stan, this thing about their ports, don't you think that they're going to, the rest of our lives, because we owe all these other countries so much money, and they know there's no way in the world we could ever pay it back in 5,000 years, and they know that we're just going to print money anyway, and it'll all be worthless. So North America being the premier real estate on planet Earth, don't you think the rest of our lives are just going to give away more and more of our infrastructure to various groups?
I think you're absolutely right, and that's a great talking point for people. Why are we doing what we're doing?
Yeah.
Why, you know, if we had our tariffs, we would not be, you know, be able to buy all these things so cheaply, and people might even be saving some money. Horrors.
Yeah.
They might be saving for their old age. Well, I got news for them. There's not going to be any Social Security or Medicare for them, and a lot of our older people are just going to be impoverished when the whole financial system collapses. And you're absolutely right. I mean, the people from Dubai, $8 billion, that's nothing to them, $6 or $8 billion.
Right.
I mean, the Chinese have something like $800 billion of foreign currency. An awful lot of that is American. They own our treasury bonds. They own our the bonds that are based upon the housing here in America.
Right.
Yeah, the other countries are simply buying up America with the full help and support of the leaders of both political parties. And that's a great talking point. Try to get people to understand.
Let me give you an example here in Texas, Dr. Stan. Sorry to interrupt you.
No, go right ahead.
They're building, going to start building soon, a gigantic highway from the Mexico border across Texas on up to Canada.
Right.
The portion, and there's many of our highways in Texas are going to be turned into toll roads.
Right.
Guess who is going to be in control of those toll roads and that super highway that will include trucks, cars, trains, and so forth.
Who?
A company owned by the King of Spain.
Well, I wouldn't be so surprised.
Spain? No, it's the news around here, and it's true. You know, Spain once owned Texas. Looks like they will again, eh?
Well, I think, you see, what a great talking point for those Texans down there. You know, Texans are a special type of people. They're pretty independent. You get them to understand that they're out to take over Texas. They're not going to like that. I don't think they're worried about whether they take over California. They just don't want them to take over Texas.
That's right. Thank you, Dr. Stan.
God bless, and thanks so much for calling.
No,
okay, well, let's go to Scott, who's calling from Hollister. Hi, Scott. Do you have a quick question?
Yes, I just a quick comment, Dr. Stan, and I know I wanted to jump in while it was free talk. You know, I just wanted to make a note that I heard Bush saying the other day that he was going to be committed to having the United States help rebuild the Golden Mosque that was blown up. And I just like how he just gives our money away, our tax dollars away, and our workforce to generate this mosque and what are the other projects he's got going, you know. So I found it very interesting how he just was commit our forces and commit our workforce to rebuilding that. So
they're giving our money away, you know, and they're borrowing from future generations, not only from our children but from our grandchildren. And they're simply, destroying the heritage of this country. There's no better way to destroy a nation than to destroy its financial stability. And the Bush administration has done more to harm this country than any administration of all time. Hang on, we'll be right back in just a minute to wrap up the program. Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, and I always enjoy when we have open lines and we have an opportunity to share ideas with our various callers, and we have we got about 3 minutes before we have to go to the wrap-up of the program. But I think that so many of the points that have been made, and certainly this Pan-American Highway that our caller from Texas was talking about, Dix from Texas, you know, I think that this is a very real problem. I think the fact that they're going to begin shifting all of our highways over to toll roads, you know, and basically what they're beginning to do is sell off many of our forests and national things of that sort. You see, we have an $8 trillion debt at the present time. But that's only the debt that they tell you about. If you look and see what the federal government actually owes, and of course this would be then what they promised for Social Security, what they promised for Medicare, what they promised for federal pensions, what they promised for veterans payments and veterans disability, why are you talking up somewhere between 60 and 70 trillion? That's T with a great big T. $60-70 trillion. There's no way it can be paid off. And everybody in Washington, D.C. knows that. They just don't want the American people to know it as they go merrily on their way, increasing the deficit spending. And President Bush is so happy this year that they cut the federal deficit from about $400 billion, that's B billion dollars, to about $330 billion. But of course, then they didn't include the off budget items, like I think $80 billion for the Iraq War, and another $20 or $30 or $60 billion for Katrina, and heaven only knows what they do off budget. And it's all smoke and mirrors. It's all symbolism over substance. It's rhetoric over reality. And of course, basically, then of course they never mentioned they're stealing $200 billion from the Social Security and Medicare fund. And as the end of this month, this month we run out of money. So they're going to have to, get the Congress to increase the debt level, either that or shut down Washington, D.C. What a wonderful thought that would be. I think it was Will Rogers who said, No man's purse or property are safe when Congress is in session. Wouldn't it be wonderful if we could limit the activity of our congressmen and stop them from passing bills and legislation, sending our money to all sorts of places all over this country and all over the world, money we don't have, money that will be paid for by our children and grandchildren? Well, this is Dr. Stan, and of course, there's so many things that are going on here. And of course, we started out talking on the war on terrorism. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and this is the time when I need to remind all of our listeners out across America that we're primarily listener-supported, and I like to think we're a voice of reason in a world gone mad. And if you believe, as I do, we're involved in a spiritual battle being fought on a political battlefield, we hope that many of you will decide to join the Radio Liberty family of supporters and help us, because quite frankly, we need your help. I mean, we're on about 60 stations every single week. Some of them every day and some of them just once a week, but at least we have an outreach there, and we see the result of that and the response we're getting from people across the country. And so if you'd like to join the Radio Liberty Family Supporters for a suggested gift of $20 a month or more, as much as you can afford, you'll get our four best tapes or CDs of the month. You'll get our monthly newsletter, but more than that, you'll be helping us. Now, some people can't afford that. They just subscribe to the newsletter. That's fine. You can get the newsletter free up on the web internet site of RadioLiberty.com, RadioLiberty.com, and we have our programs there archived in MP5, MP3, I should say. You can pick those down, and we don't charge for that. We hope that you want to support us, but we want you to get that information, and our hope is that you'll get the information, you'll copy it, and you'll get it into other people's hands. Now, we, of course, had talked the last hour, and we would want to remind you about the great new DVD by Chris Pinto, entitled Secret Mysteries of America's Beginning. Secret Mysteries of America's Beginning. It is excellent. And it's almost 3 hours. You'll be transfixed the whole time. There are a lot of things that certainly that we have that have a lot of facts in it, but how do you entertain and educate at the same time? Well, Chris is a master. I think we're indebted to him. We have, Gary, his Megiddo 1 and Megiddo 2 videos, but the latest one is must-watching, and then we want you to get other people to watch it, too, because it goes into the secret societies that are right here now, and the secret societies that have been here, and you'll see pictures of the Rosicrucian Temple in San Jose, California, with all of its Egyptian mysteries and mystique there, and great things. I have a small part in this, but so does certainly William Still and Bill Sneplin, but they bring all of this together. And how do you actually get a program like this to hold people transfixed? Well, I think this will do it for you. So let me suggest that you order the Secret Mysteries of America's Beginning, certainly Megiddo 1, Megiddo 2. They sold their souls for rock and roll, the 3-hour, 4-hour, 10-hour versions. And then we do have my talk I gave back in 1997 on the Brotherhood of Darkness. They did a great job when they put this onto DVD, so it is available today. That's the Brotherhood of Darkness. It's available on video. It's available on DVD. And then, of course, we also want to remind you that we do have my DVD on planned population reduction. If you can get people to watch this, and there are lots of graphics and other things, so that you don't get too bored after 2.5 hours. In fact, most people sit transfixed. In fact, I was fascinated watching it, after recording this. They did an excellent job of putting it together, and I'm indebted to them. Call us at 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-544-8927. Or, of course, go to our website of RadioLiberty.com, and you can pull down our programs. You can pull down our newsletters. And then, of course, we do hope that many of you will tell others about our programs, encourage them, because that's your job. People reaching people by reaching people, but we're reaching more than any ever before, and more people are beginning to understand. This is not a political battle. It's not an ideological battle. It certainly has nothing to do with Osama bin Laden or war on terrorism. It's a spiritual battle for the souls of men. So we ask you to pray for America. We ask you to pray for revival, because if people of this country don't turn back to God, we're going to lose this nation. And then, of course, we ask you to pray for our leaders and for our ministers, but please remember to pray for my ministry, Radio Liberty, for our provision and for our protection. And so until tomorrow at the same time, may the Lord be with you.